You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio. You are with Marie, and joining me now is Karina Shields, Auntie Hey Hey herself. As you know, Karina is a frequent guest here, and this week, man, I had to send you a text saying, oh, sis, we got to talk. There's a lot going on.
There is. Good morning, Marie. Oh, man, I tell you, it is good to be back. Especially with everything happening this week, it's just like, oh, this is the moment that I have been waiting for the last 2.5, 3 years, just about.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is the unravelling. So since Budget Day, the unravelling of, as Haimona Gray called it, the fiefdom of John Tamahere. Now, let's start at the beginning. From your perspective, you do have your own story around this. So let's start with that for context, and then we will move into what is going on.
Yep. So back in 2021, I was made aware that Labor had put out $120 million in specific Māori funding for jabbing and bribing Māori to go off and get the jab. Now, at that same time that was happening, John Tamahere went to court for the private details of unjabbed Māori in an effort to contact them and have them go get jabbed. I received 2 phone calls from Waipareira. I live local to Waipareira. They're about 10 minutes from me. I've never signed up to their services in all the years that they have been around, yet somehow they had my phone number to contact me and offer me a jab and, you know, some bribes in exchange for going to get jabbed, and I declined. And then they called me again, and I said to them, come back to me in 3 years' time when you have more research, and we will have a cordial then. But right now, no, and I don't want anybody else calling me. And then I never heard anything from them again until 2023, when Cyclone Gabrielle hit and all that bad weather was going on, and I got a text from Waipareira. And in that text, it said it was about weather and being safe and what to do. And at the end of that, it had 2 hashtags. Hashtag stay safe, hashtag get vaxxed. And I went, huh? Why is there a get vaxxed hashtag at the end of this weather check-in that they were doing? And so off of that, I did a Privacy Act request. Now, that took a long time to get back. And in that Privacy Act request, it didn't tell me a lot, except to say that did I, because they were talking about me and internal communications, did I think that they were a health center for me to be asking for this information? No. I was doing a Privacy Act request as somebody who was not a client of Waipareira, wanting to know why they were sending me texts and ringing me about things that I didn't want to be a part of. Come to find out, there's a lot of money that has been exchanged in the background. And so, yeah. There's a lot.
So the unraveling, of course, now, I mean, you have been... Since then, so 2021, this started with you, but you have been sort of on this now quite consistently for over a year and talking to a lot of people because you had questions around that privacy.
Yeah.
Did they, I mean, when you went to Waipareira to pick up your request, I mean, was any explanation given whatsoever? I mean, what was your reception when you went to Waipareira to get that information?
Oh, I tell you, it was very weird. So they offered me a few different ways of getting my information. Did I want to email? I'm the kind of person, if you give me the option to turn up personally, I'm turning up personally. So I said, no, I will come pick it up. Thank you very much. I made my husband come with me because I wasn't stepping into that building alone. And we were escorted all the way up to, I believe it was the 4th floor. They got us to sit in the reception area. It was very frosty. The woman that escorted us in also escorted us out of the building. And why do I need to be escorted? Why could somebody not just tell me, oh, reception's up on 4th floor, just take the lift up there? I got fully escorted in and out. And I think it was in an effort for me to not be able to have a nosy around the building and, you know, look at things. To have somebody sit there that whole time, like, why do I need an escort to sit with me in reception? That doesn't make sense.
So then let's also fast forward to the election. So yeah. you had that those hashtags around Gabrielle. Then the election happened. Now, you had some interesting observations around what is a trust for public services and within Māori, within the West Auckland area. But all of a sudden, there seemed to be a lot more political advertising or awareness within that trust. So walk me through that.
Okay, so Waipareira were very big on jabbing people, and they've got a whole bunch of vehicles. Now, to my knowledge, charities are supposed to be politically neutral. But we've got John Tamihere, Rawiri Waititi, and Debbie Ngarewa Packer's faces on Waipareira buildings. What I also know is that Waipareira hosted Te Pāti Māori's election launch campaign at Hoāinu Waititi over at Pās Park as part of Matariki celebrations. And so they are or have been driving around in the community trying to get people jabbed over the last couple of years. And from what I've noticed lately, those vehicles now are just sitting there. They've been sitting in those in the car park down there for months. What are they being used for? How much money was used to buy those vehicles that were used to target whānau in the area?
So then money. Let's look at the money. In regards to COVID, now I've tried to unravel where things sit. And there are two people that have done a tremendous amount of work in this space. One is Philip Crump, a.k.a. Thomas Cramner, and he's based with Newstalk ZB Plus. And then, of course, Andrea Vance released, and that's what blew me away. Out of the blue, Andrea drops this absolute bombshell article with stuff. I think Sunday Star Times in print. And she really, weeks and weeks worth of work had gone into that piece. You can see it by the number of people she'd spoken to. It was very carefully crafted. I think the legal team would have gone over it like a fine tooth comb because if you've known or been aware of JT, he's fond of a legal, he's fond of a lawyer. So these two, particularly Cramner, he's been releasing stuff on X fairly constantly over the last few years. Vance drops her piece. One of the things around that is the web between the Waipareira Trust, Te Whānau Ora Ora Commissioning Agency, its parent group to Pōma Tikana Limited, where Manurewa Marae fits in with all of this, the linkages between Tamahere, his wife, where Debbie and Rawiri fit in, where their spouse of Rawiri, daughter of Tamahere. I mean, it's so complex. And more than that, millions and millions of dollars. So give us an idea of the scale of the money that we're talking here for some of these services.
$120 million was made available for Māori organisations. Now, I believe that Manurewa Marae falls under the Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency as one of their partners.
Yeah.
And so I've been hearing stories that people were getting paid up to $200 for different things. These are workers getting paid $200 a pop for signing people up to get people jabbed.
So this is the bonus scheme that they had for their top. Now, what do they call them? Their top activators.
Yeah. Apparently, these bonuses are very real, and people have told me this. I have asked a few questions around other things in relation to people that I've talked to, but it seems that people have different information about different things, and it is going to take a lot of time and energy to work through that complicated web that is there, because it's more widespread, I believe, based on what I've seen, based on what I know. This is only scratching the surface of everything, and there is so much more to come. I think that Labour also has a part to play in this, because they allowed Te Pāti Māori and they allowed their own Māori caucus to run roughshod over everything over the last few years. And now Labour's backed themselves into a corner, because who do they side with? Do they side with Willie Jackson, who has close connections to JT, or do they side with Pene Hinare, who was jipped out of his seat, quite possibly?
Well, let's talk about Pene Hinare. I mean, he's the big loser in this.
Yeah.
So Tash Kemp, who was the CEO of the Manurewa Marae, which I covered last week on Media Matters, it was, what, $6.5 million in 2021 they received as part of health funding. And it was under a very broad category. So that says to me predominantly 2021. Well, you know, do the math. That's a lot of needles and a lot of brown arms.
Yeah.
And roll round to the election of 23. And, of course, Hinare, who was an exceptionally popular MP in that Tamaki Makaurau electorate, which is your electorate, I understand.
I switched off.
That's right. You jumped over to the... Yeah.
I did jump over.
The general role. But actually, that's all part of this. So 42 votes. And they did a recount. I mean, I feel for him. I really do. And one of the things in Vance's story was they said the same thing. There was sympathy for Pene Hinare, claiming that he was not going to be able to really win because he wasn't able to, and I quote, activate as well as Tash. And you said the word before. I mean, activate my ass. That's a bribe any day of the week.
Yep, absolutely.
So the Electoral Commission, there were complaints received by Labour, by National, by Vision New Zealand, and they have been just ignored.
The Electoral Commission have failed a lot of people, especially those who voted at Manurewa Marae. There were things that are coming out that should never have happened. Even in the lead up, the early voting and things, people shouldn't have received those things for the early voting. We shouldn't even have early voting, if I'm being really honest with you. There should be very, very strict criteria around who is able to early vote, because what's the point of an election day if half the country has already voted?
And the current investigation has been, that we've now seen, the current media, is on the back of a complaint to Stats New Zealand on the gathering of census data and then the misuse of that data during the election campaign. And and you talked about this in terms of the bribes that were being handed out at Waipareira in your area for census gathering in previous interviews. So at the same time, they were simultaneously gathering census data, getting people signed up to the census, but also talking to their people around switching from the general role to the Māori role if that was where they were sitting. Now, you went in the other direction at that time.
And in fact,
a good deal of Māori did. That was one of the things that was quite intriguing. There was only the net gain onto that role was much smaller than anticipated. The people that switched, it tended to be those who were 40 plus switched off the Māori role to the general role, and those that were 18 to 25, switched on.
Yep. That is definitely what happened.
So they moved people, they were really encouraging people, onto the Māori role. The net gain wasn't as great. But then there was all these activations. So they got, what do they call them? Wellbeing packs? Wellbeing packs? For being with the for all the work that's been done. How much influence? I mean, you're in the Māori community. If you're somebody who's, you know, up against the wall and you're in that area and, you know, you get told that if you go down and fill out these forms and do this, or someone knocks on the door, from whether it be Waipareira or Manurewa Marae and says, we're doing the survey, are you on the census? We've got this, we've got a pack and save voucher. I mean, what would be the general response from most whānau if that were to happen to them?
The area that Waipareira services isn't a rich area. We have a lot of people who are needy. And so there were people who went and did things because they needed to put kai on the table. And so if you're going to give them a $100 or a $200 pack and save voucher, people who are in need are easier to control. And so that's what I saw. I know some of my own whānau didn't want to go and get it, but hey, Waipareira is giving away free stuff, so why not go and get the free stuff? Why not go sign a piece of paper? Because we can get something out of it. I saw them take advantage of vulnerable people in the community. At a time of need, people were being offered bribes. Instead of being offered the help that they need, they were being asked for something in return. I know of people who were denied food grants during lockdowns, and we got given food parcels from Waipareira, food parcels that we didn't need because my child was in a Māori school. And I asked them, stop giving them to us. We don't need this kai. Go and give it to other people who actually need it. And in the end, we were using that kai to give to other people that I was seeing online talking about, we need kai, we got denied a food grant. I was putting things together with my mother to give to these people because we had been given so much that we didn't need, while those who needed it were suffering.
You know, there's a saying that if you don't pay for a product, you are the product.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Waipareira have used Māori as a commodity to service and essentially harvest government funds that don't necessarily trickle down to the Māori that they have used to harvest those funds to begin with?
Absolutely. Based on the stories that I've heard from people, the things that I've seen, they're absolutely using their own people for financial gain for themselves. To know that John Tamihere, from his donation that he gave, the address that he has listed, that house sold was bought for $4.9 million in 2022. $4.9 million on a house while people in the community are asking for kai. While Waipareira sits today, at the end of the last financial year, we're sitting on over $64 million in cash and cash assets, and people are asking for kai. That's not okay for me. To hear that rangatahi services for the community have been cut in favour of jabbing those same rangatahi, that's not okay for me. Where are the services that our rangatahi need? Where is the mental health care that they need? Where is the access to socialization that they need, basketball games and things? Where is that stuff? Because I'm not seeing enough of it from Waipareira.
That's a tremendous, how much, just sorry, my head is boggling. What was that number again on cash and assets?
$64 million. I looked it up in Thomas Cranmer's Phillips stuff that he had coming out.
That's a staggering amount of money.
That's $50 million.
Are they
in
waiting for? Sorry, are they waiting for a rainy day or something? Because I would have thought for a lot of the Māori in the areas that they service, their rainy day is here.
Yeah, that rainy day is here. Now, in 2017, that figure was $8 million. By the end of 2022, it was $50 million. The end of the 2023 financial year, it was $64 million. What is it going to be at the end of this financial year?
And the source of that money is coming primarily from Te Whānau Ora,
who were given $164 million, I believe, in last year's budget over 4 years. Which, there you go, Labour again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a lots of why, where, how, and who in this. And I'm, you know, it's one of the things that drove me crazy. And I asked this question actually of Muriel Newman last week in the Fourth Estate, was outside of Andrea Vance, who wrote that piece, you know, a couple of Sundays ago, and then Thomas Cramner, aka Philip Crump, has been doing his work a bit on Hosking's crickets.
Absolute crickets.
Muriel had an interesting take on Friday. Her take was, and it's actually the Occam's razor, really, when you think about it. And her take was, this is where the Public Interest Journalism Fund plays a part, because, of course, that precludes you from criticising anything that is negative towards Māori, particularly Te Tiriti. And as we know, I mean, they could probably play that Te Tiriti card at any time, which would then create a funding issue with these media outlets. I mean, do you think that comes into play with it, or do you think that there's more than that?
I think that's only a tiny part of it. I think we don't even know the full extent of how deep this corruption is. There are things that are hidden behind paywalls that should be public interest journalism. And there are things that are put out under public interest journalism that are just rubbish, nonsense stuff. And so I think Labor created a lot of problems around the funding that they made available for lots of different things. They allowed Party Māori and the Māori caucus to basically run things, do things their way. Jacinda and Chris Hipkins let them do things their way, way too much. You look at Nanaia Mahuta and the stuff that she's been getting involved in, Penny Henare and contracts, Calvin Davis, there is a lot of dodginess that goes on within our Māori MPs. And again, we go back to that lack of accountability. And I think that people are too scared to hold Māori to account because of what is going on. And we need to stop that nonsense, because at the end of the day, the rest of us suffer. The whole country suffers because corrupt people are allowed to continue being corrupt, in part, I believe, because they fuck a papa Māori.
Yeah, so I've been reading a couple of the pieces. I mean, one of the ones in regards to this issue, as I mentioned earlier, by Haumaina Gray. Now, he wrote a previous piece, which was also very good, around Kaiangaroa, which I know is another hot topic for you. So let's go there for a bit, shall we? A little change of pace. And he, and of course, he's of a mixed race, Māori Pākehā, like many of us, let's face it.
Right.
And in, especially for him, you know, Pākehā father, Māori mother, and he mentioned in that piece that he's, you know, not Māori enough for the Māori and he's too Māori for the Pākehā, so where do you sit in between? And he brought up the sort of bullying nature in terms of whakapapa and your place within Māoridom, with the Harawiras, which of course is where you hail from. So, you know, just explain a little bit around that for people that don't understand that dynamic in the North, in terms of what their belief is of being Māori.
Their belief of being Māori is it's their way or the highway. Basically, they are very much like Te Pāti Māori. They are very much those activists, and they have been activists for a number of years. We all know that. You mentioned the Harawira name to most people, and if they're not related to them, most Māori that I know roll their eyes and go, right, not them again. Here we go. What have they done now? It's always a what have the Harawiras got up to now? And so I think that Jacinda, with all the lockdowns and things and blocking roads, she allowed Hune Harawira way too much power in being able to block roads and stop people from going home to their own marae. They pissed off a lot of Māori in the North by not being able to go to their own marae.
Mm. One of the themes that comes out from this, and in that article with Kāinga Ora, of course, which all comes around in terms of the bill that they're looking to change, and Karen Shaw is at the heart of this, and she is a woman who whakapapa's Māori, but she was raised in the system by a non-Māori family.
Yeah.
And the bullying, and that's all it was, pure and simple, the bullying of her by Māori caucus members, I thought was abhorrent, absolutely yeah. abhorrent. Well, I mean, do you look at that? I mean, you're somebody, I mean, there are things that need to be recognised, like particularly around whāngai yeah. and all of those aspects, but the law itself, I mean, it's sloppy, it's poorly written, it needs to be firmed up. Surely the most important thing for any child is security, safety, and love.
Yep. Karen Chua has a hard job ahead of her when it comes to Oranga Tamariki and what is happening in that whole space. Now, for my husband and I am Māori, he is Pākehā, we have a whānau boy. If for some reason something was to happen to me, I would come back and haunt people if they came and tried to take my boy away from my husband. This man feeds, clothes, educates, drives this child around, takes him to places that he needs to go, is part of whānau hui, is part of doing the hangi at kura. Do not tell me that because he cannot whakapapa Māori that he is not capable of raising our whānau boy. What Oranga Tamariki fails again, it's that accountability. How many of our Māori children have to be killed at the hands of their own before it is taken seriously enough? Whānau are not held accountable for what they are doing to their own children. And so if these people that jump up about cultural reports and whānau support, where was your whānau support for these whānau and these children before the tragedy happened? Get involved before the tragedy happens instead of afterwards saying, well, we need a cultural report and we need to put this child back here. No, we need to ultimately put those tamariki in places that they are safe. And Oranga Tamariki, the way that they operate, the way that they are not safe places. It needs a major, major overhaul. I completely understand in terms of not being Māori enough, not being Pākehā enough, as somebody who is both. I wrote a piece, back in 2020, that I called Diary of a Mad, Not Quite Black Woman. A little play on words of the movie, Diary of a Mad Black Woman. And it talked about walking between both of those worlds and not being Māori enough for the Māori and not being Pākehā enough for the Pākehā, of experiencing that racism of both sides and how it just needs to stop. So I completely understand how Karen would have felt by being attacked by her own colleagues because it's a lived experience for so many of us.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it comes back to how do we retake that fabric? How do we get talking? How do we bring people to the table? And you look at these activist classes within Māoridom especially, and it worries me. You know, they've always been, I mean, let's face it, they've always been there. And I know that for my grandfather, he purposely disconnected himself from his marae, after the Springbok tour. And he was a very renowned sportsman in the area that we're from. He was a Māori All Black. And he was very good friends with the chief of the tribe in our area at the time. Was one of his close. I didn't even know. I mean, we just called him Uncle Fi. I'd come home from school because I was living, I'd been whangaed out. I was living with my aunt at the time. And Uncle Fi would just be there. You know, he'd come down from the coast and he'd be having a cup of tea with my granddad. And I was not 10. I didn't know who he was. Anywho, and he was asked to go and speak at the marae. at the time of the Springbok tour. And he went up, and it was in Rurotoria, and he spoke, and it was around, you know, the dangers of politics and race, and how actually sometimes sport can open a conversation around some of these things. And also, you know, it was just looking at the whole tour aspect from a different angle, and from an angle of, well, actually, you can use this to put a spotlight on things like apartheid and all that kind of stuff. And he thought it went quite well. When he went to leave, he was jumped and nearly beaten to death by some of those that didn't agree with what he had to say. Yeah. And for him, that was it. That was it. And I remember quite clearly him saying, and I mean, up until that point, as when I would go up, he was living prior to that in Tokomara Bay, and I'd go up and we'd go to the marae and stuff. And prior to, and after that, he said to me, with these, you can't, if people aren't prepared to listen, you can't speak. And he just never went back. And it's only just exacerbated since then. So, I mean, what are you, when you go back up north, I mean, are there those who still are very connected back to marae who are just so frustrated with the ones who are very tied up with the rhetoric of the activists and just are struggling to have them go back to the core principles of that, of marae, of protocol, of whānau, of hapū, of that togetherness, the manaakitanga? Is, I mean, do you feel that when you go home?
I love going home. It is a safe space for me. But what I've found is there are extended whānau that I didn't know who have turned up for tangi and things, who have pulled me aside and been like, I follow you online, I watch what you say, keep it up. And I'm like, okay, cool. This is what I need to hear. I need to hear this from people at home, that the things that I am saying are actually tūturu, are actually true Māori. And so I am constantly overwhelmed by the support that whānau is showing. I have had people follow me on TikTok who are whānau, who I've just met, some that I've known for years, and they answer the things or answer to the things that I've said. And I'm like, okay, I'm on the right track, because if my own whānau are starting to support me, then cool. That's all that matters at the end of the day, is that for me, my whānau supports the things that I'm saying. Other people can disagree. That's kei te pai. Those people aren't part of my life. I don't need to deal with them, but I do need to deal with my whānau. And so knowing that the support is there and that they have the same ideas about what they want to see for Māori, that just blows my mind. I love that, that it's whānau that is supporting.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. Well, if other people want to actually hear what you've got to say, and you're going to love this, I got someone who I know who sent me a TikTok the other day with the caption of, oh, you've got to hear this woman, she's bloody brilliant, and it was you. So I was able to text back saying, well, I know. So it was
I just met somebody in the supermarket last night. I went in to get dinner and she just kind of stops me in the supermarket. She's like, I follow you. And so we had a little bit of a chat. It is always an experience. So I never expect that I'm going to walk out and somebody's going to recognize me for the things that I say on X or TikTok. Good times.
but it's good to get that recognition and that that people are listening. So if those who have heard this and they've not actually been following you, so TikTok and X, are you still there as Auntie Hey Hey?
Auntie Hey Hey on X. Now, Auntie Hey Hey 7 on TikTok. That's how many TikTok accounts I have got.
Seven.
Auntie Hey Hey 7.
Oh, I think we were up to 3 last time we talked.
Yeah, no, we're well past that now. We are up to 7.
Oh, Karina, as always, it is so good to catch up. And yes, this is an ever-evolving story. Yes. And so we, as I mentioned before, Haimona Gray is with Diwa Du Bois on the dialogue, and that was on Friday. So you can go back and have a listen to that. I mentioned it slightly, as I said, with For the State also on Friday. We are tracking the story because so many people aren't tracking the story. We are just sort of tracking to see where things go. So do make sure you do that. And just a little reminder for everybody as well, if you've had the app and it's being a bit little funky-dunky for you, and you're thinking, what's going on? We have had a massive software upgrade. So one of the things I noticed is I actually uninstalled the app and reinstalled it, and it made a massive difference. So if you're having some issues, do that, and you'll probably find that it'll start working really well for you. Hey, look, Karina, we're going to stay in touch over this because this is definitely unfolding. But thank you for all the work you're continuing to do around the space. And yeah, I'm really big on getting people to realize that Māori isn't just these activists, isn't just these bad faith actors. That I mean, let's face it, so much more than that. Then, you know, we know this from the numbers of the people that have voted, that there is a richness there and a tapestry there that needs to be celebrated. And if we realise that, I think we can all come together and it's going to be a really bright future for us all. So,
absolutely. Thanks for having me. Good to have a catch up.
Oh, it is always good to have a catch up. Don't Disappear, of course, coming up next here on Counterculture with Reality Check Radio is Marty. He'll be along and we'll have a good old chew fat over what went down in the papers over the weekend and what's hot and what's not in the world of media and politics going on right now here in New Zealand. So until then, Don't Disappear, Marty up next, and thanks, Karina. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.